Okay, Karen.
And I'll invite Harvey to join me.
Go
through some of the legislation that is out there that may be of interest to Sarah and the Board of Retirement. You do have a memo with a summary of the pending bills in the agenda item number 11. And they are pending right now. They could still be amended. And October 15th, 2017 is the last day for the governor to sign or veto bills that are passed by the legislature. So we start with a couple of constitutional amendments that are out there. The first one is SCA 8 by Mr. Morlach. And that measure would amend the California State Constitution to permit a government employer to reduce retirement benefits that are based on work not yet performed by an employee, regardless of the date the employee was first hired. This one is currently set for a hearing on June 26, 2017, before the Senate Committee on Public Employment and Retirement.
This is the bill. This has been John Morlach's hobby horse for a long time, and basically it's the idea of repealing what we've come to know as the California rule, which says that you accrue for not only past service but future service has to be at no lower rate, no lower formula than your prior years of service. This would say basically you're on a year-to-year basis or an MOU to MOU basis that you earn the retirement that's in place for the year of service and you're not locked in for future years.
So help me understand. So I go to work for the county. I get to a management position in the middle of my career. And then towards the end of my career, I go back down to a line staff position. They base my salary on the last position.
Let's think about it in terms of formula. Mm-hmm. Make it real easy. Let's say your first 20 years, you're 3 at 50.
Okay.
And then your unit negotiates with the county, your deputy sheriffs are now going to get 2 at 50 for the rest of their career. Under California law, up till now, that's not been possible. This would make that possible.
Okay, so right now I would get the 3 at 50, but if
you
this law goes through, I would
years.
Get the 2 at 50.
For the remainder.
Each year you would earn and accrue at whatever the formula is in place under your MOU for
all
that
right.
year.
Again.
The next constitutional amendment that is pending also by Mr. Morlach is SCA 10. And this would prohibit a government employer from providing public employees any retirement benefit increase until that increase is approved by a two-thirds vote of the electorate of the applicable jurisdiction.
It is.
But a two-thirds instead of a majority.
It's a higher bar.
Yeah, higher bar.
Higher
yes.
bar.
And that's also set for a hearing on June 26. An additional constitutional amendment that is not in the memo, it's fairly recent, is ACA 15 by Assemblymember Burrow. And it would create the Protecting Schools and Keeping Pension Promises Act of 2018. And that measure would prohibit a government employer from enhancing employee pension benefits without approval by the voters of the jurisdiction, and would prohibit a government employer from enrolling new government employees in a defined benefit pension plan without approval of the voters of the jurisdiction.
That would also do, by the way, what CalPERS, it would take away the right that CalPERS has to, if they have a defaulting plan sponsor, to reduce benefits accordingly if they're not getting paid contributions by the plan sponsor. The San Gabriel Water District and Loyalton are in that situation in CalPERS. CalPERS uniquely has that provision. Nobody else has that right to reduce benefits. This would say that you could not penalize, no retirement system could penalize an employer who wants to close their defined benefit plan. For example, we here in Contra Costa, with the city of Pittsburgh, for example, when they closed the plan, on an actuarial basis, we had to increase what was due. We went from an assumed rate of return amortization to a safer rate of return, and that's happened elsewhere. This bill would prohibit you from being able to change the amortization of the unfunded liability for an employer who's closing their participation in the plan.
And of course, they would set up a fund for the state then to make up that difference.
Sure, they would. Maybe not so much.
Yeah, right.
I didn't see that in the small print.
Yeah, okay, I'm just wondering who's going to pay for that. But
So moving on to AB 283 by Cooper, this has to do with the wording of the disability standard for safety members. And the purpose of this bill, according to the author, is to clarify that if a safety person is in a peace officer position, if they're filing for a disability and they're unable to do the regular duties of a peace officer, then they should be found to be disabled regardless of situations where they might be on light duty or on a management assignment that may not require all of the physical requirements and duties that go along with being a peace officer. So this actually would change the wording of Government Code Section 31720, which is what we use for safety disability determinations. AB 526, this one is from Sacramento County, would make the retirement system there an independent district and a direct employer for all of its staff. AB 5.
I thought that was only for their management staff and not for their line staff. I thought that's what.
This bill actually provides them with a menu of choices from which to elect how.
So they could
exactly
go all the way
extent.
Like we are then.
They could, yes.
If this bill goes through. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
The retirement system would make that decision and choose which option they would like. AB 551 would be a change to the Political Reform Act. It has to do with post-employment restrictions, and it broadens the restrictions to include independent contractors, and so they would not be allowed for a period of 1 year after their termination with the agency to come before the agency and influence an agency decision.
Karen, I haven't been following this one, but as an independent contractor to this board and our boards, this would prohibit me from appearing in front of the board again?
So I don't read it that way. I read the timing of the independent contractor status to be post-employment. I think what they're intending to do is not cover, it doesn't go against or cover independent contractors of the agency during employment. It covers, for example, an employee who leaves, let's say the executive director leaves and becomes an independent contractor, then for a year they can't use that status to shield them from being able to influence the agency decision. That's how I read it currently.
So you read it to include employees? Because the summary
yes,
we
it
have
inc-
here says elected and other officials.
It does include, it'll include the executive officer of the agency as well.
So,
yes.
So this would mirror the Pepper provision on coming back to work for, you know, more than
960.
Half year of current employees, right, after they retire.
Yeah, I
In
think.
Fact, you can't come back as an employee or as an independent contractor for the same employer.
That's how I read it, is that you can't put on this independent contractor shield to now allow you to come back, you know, former executive officer or former board member come back and try to influence the agency within a year of your departure. AB 1025, incompatible public offices. This one would repeal the statute that currently prohibits a public officer from simultaneously holding two public offices that are incompatible. I'm not sure what the reasoning is behind bill.
We want them to work harder, I think.
There's got to be somebody out there that
wants to do two things. Is,
yes, possibly.
It wasn't for me. Rubio would never have done this for me.
AB 1310, this one would require the retirement board of public retirement systems, including Searle Systems, to disclose the unfunded liability and health care debt of the system on each member statement provided to members of the system. And the status of this one is that it died, so it's no longer a pending bill.
Is there a possibility of that coming back in 18?
It's possible.
It could come back.
AB 1479 is a Public Records Act change, and it would require state and local agencies to designate a person or an office to act as the agency's custodian of records, who's responsible for responding to any requests made pursuant to the PRA, the Public Records Act, and any inquiry from the public about a decision by the agency to deny a request for records. And it would authorize a court to assess a civil penalty against the agency for declining to respond.
That's all well and good, but
I see. I know a few people who might have put that one in.
But my thought is, does it also obligate the individual to understand the requirements of the act and to follow the act? Because there's plenty of examples out there annually of districts and agencies that will respond inaccurately to those requests, or say they don't have to respond to the requests. This just says there's one person that can deny a valid request.
Yeah, well, I mean, the statute itself already talks about the obligation of the agency to respond within a certain period of time and assist the requester in figuring out what it is that they would like, and so that's elsewhere in the statute already.
Violations of this are like jaywalking, as near as I can tell.
Yeah.
Most people either do not understand their obligations or ignore them.
Okay. You mean agencies?
Agencies, that's what I mean.
So SB 32, this one would enact the California Public Employees Pension Reform Act of 2018. It contains a whole list of prohibitions and limitations. For example, it would prohibit a public retirement board from deeming additional pay items as pensionable compensation for PEPRA. It would, for individuals who become members of any public retirement system on or after January 1 of 2018, the final compensation used to determine their retirement benefits would be the highest annual pensionable compensation earned during a period of 60 consecutive months. And it would prohibit a public retirement system from making a cost of living adjustment to any allowance payable to a retired person under the system for any year beginning on or after January 1, 2018.
Karen? No, that's if there's an unfunded liability. If we have a UAAL, no COLAs.
In your estimation, is there any traction on this?
The committee voted against it. It's dead.
Who did?
The committee, the PERS committee in the Senate.
My question is to
the next one has to do with employer prepayments of contribution. That's SB 671. It would amend the Searle statute, Government Code Section 31582, that currently permits the county to make advance payments of the county's contributions to the retirement fund. And this bill would allow the advance payments to be made for an additional year or a partial year. And it also clarifies that it applies to districts as well and not just the county.
Is there a limit on that right now? I mean, can they can only do it for like 6 months or?
It has to be
really?
Within 30 days of the start of the fiscal year.
Yeah, there's only once a year that they can do it now.
Okay.
It'd be interesting to get some commentary maybe from Tim if this bill ever gets any further along about the cash flow implications of prepayment. I think we've talked about that before, but there, you know, in a volatile market at the end of its, such as this one that's rather long in the tooth of a bull market, getting a huge lump sum payment in from all your plan sponsors and having to deploy that, especially if you're looking at funding vintage years of private equity vehicles, it could pose real issues for the fund. It's not necessarily a blessing to the fund to be able to bring all that money in at once, and given the volatility of the portfolio at this stage in the market. So, but I think that would be useful for Tim to comment on that.
RV, doesn't the same thing apply to pension obligation bonds?
Yeah, same thing.
Okay.
Same thing. You're really heightening the potential loss.
That's right.
You
get a leveraging in the wrong way.
All that money coming in all at once as opposed to dollar cost averaging it through the year. So.
And I think, too, if this does get further along, I think we'll be taking a look at the discount rate. Obviously.
That's offered to it. Yeah, a number of systems have. Orange County, I think, has got a reduced scale now. This is about the third year they've been reducing it, and so the so-called discount given to the county for prepaying their obligation is down to about 3%. Mm-hmm. It's not at the assumed rate of return for just this reason. So it's an interesting cash flow issue for the system.
Yeah, the two main issues really with this are the potentially larger influx of cash into the system, the discount rate, the discount that is provided for employers when they prepay, and the on the investment side, how quickly those additional funds can get deployed and start to make money.
Right. We're finding up and down the state, actually, that sanitation districts and fire districts are prepaying substantially more because the rate setting that they've gotten was based upon usages that haven't borne out.
Yeah.
And so especially with the fire districts, they're getting tax revenue in that they don't need to fund their operations. And so they're using that money to prepay their unfunded liabilities. And that's one of the reasons why this bill was introduced by Morlock out of Orange County, because the Orange County Fire Authority is a JPA, and they're using the tax rate to prepay the obligations, which is great for the system. But taxpayers are a little worried about it. But I don't know, Todd, about the sanitation district in the same situation.
Well, we've been prepaying for several years now.
The same reason they don't want to go back.
Well, you know, prepaying additional UAL.
UAL, yeah. So in that way, it's very good for the system's funding. So.
And in some ways, especially if employers are, you know, there's a mismatch between when they pay and when their funding hits.
Yeah.
This provides flexibility with that. So maybe some employers who are a little more strapped, they might need this additional flexibility. Because I asked the same, I'm like, where did this come from? Yeah.
This may be the only bill a Republican from Orange County can get through the California legislature in the next decade. So.
There's been a lot of support for this bill. I think it the votes were unanimous. And SACRS, the State Association of County Retirement Systems, went on record supporting it. And there's a few county retirement systems, SERL systems, that actually went up and testified in favor of it. So there's a good likelihood that this will pass. The remainder of the bills that are listed on the memo on the very last page, those do not would not apply to SACERA, but they may apply to CalPERS or CalSTRS. Put them in there for your knowledge, for your information. Unless there's any questions, I wasn't going to spend much time talking about these.
The last one's fascinating. It's pretty...
Nazarians.
Pretty specific, basically.
To actually...
Still that Armenian-Turkey thing going on there? It's a...
Well, the Armenian population wants Turkey to apologize
Correct.
For the genocide of 06. This is actually wouldn't come into effect until the federal government imposes sanctions on the government of Turkey, and then this bill would get triggered.
Hmm.
It's going to the Senate. It passed the Assembly.
Really?
Because they watered it down. Basically, the author put in that provision, which will never happen.
Yeah.
Mm. And so it's everybody saves face.
Future, yeah.
And that's why we have a legislature, John.
It makes a statement.
Do.
Of some sort.
Okay.
And if it happens, the president.
Thank you.
The border wall bill, by the way, is dead for this year at the state level.
The what is?
That's AB 946, the Ting bill.
Another one.
That it would prohibit
CalPERS
and CalSTRS from having any business dealings with anybody who's building or financing the border wall.
Or the Dakota Access Pipeline.
Would, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's also listed.
Yeah, that's there too. So. Mm-hmm.
Ripped from the headlines.
It's a slippery slope when we start letting the legislature dictate to the pension funds how they can invest their funds.
And I mean, I've heard estimates, but do we know how much money CalPERS not only spends monitoring all of these restrictions on their investment, not to mention how much they've lost because they have divested
Correct.
In all of their investments. I think a lot of agencies who are members of CalPERS would be very frustrated if they were to see those numbers.
Yeah, there are a lot of numbers on there available. And
okay, thank you both.